Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1980 Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the heroes, gods, and mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them and religion and mythology in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through Finnish mythology, taking a look at the gods and heroes of the Kalevala, Finland's great national epic poem, compiled by Elias Lönnrot. In today's episode, we've got Surma, who's kind of a keeper of the afterlife, and we've got the two main figures of the underworld, the god and goddess of death, Tuoni and Tuonetar. So let's get started. I don't think that I necessarily have a good deal to say about Surma. Surma is usually just translated in English as death, as far as I can tell, and indeed, at least one translation uses death interchangeably as a name for both Surma and Tuoni. Insofar as Surma is distinct from Tuoni, it seems to be some kind of like, there's a reference to someone, like Surma's jaws opening, right? It's the idea that like if you're courting death, you know, Surma opens his jaws. I don't know where this thing of him being kind of a wandering guy in leather clothes comes from, that is expressed in Deities and Demigods. And I think, you know, there are a couple of cases where I feel like the authors of Deities and Demigods have kind of had to extrapolate or just make stuff up, because there's a fair number of characters in Finnish mythology for whom there isn't really a lot of information. Right? It's not that they don't know what information there is, but as far as I can tell, there are a lot of these just kind of like offhand references. So I've seen a lot of references to Surma being sort of a monster rather than a person, that it's kind of a Garm-alike or a Cerberus-alike that is at the gateway to hell, but it seems here that it's more like it's what takes you into hell, right? Like when you die, it gobbles you up. But that's all just kind of my implication from metaphors that appear in the Kalevala. I don't think Surma ever appears as a character. So, again, just a little bit like with Louhi, if Tuoni's going to be playing a villainous role in your campaign, then I guess it makes sense for him and Tuonetar to have a henchman, and Surma kind of fits that bill. But, you know, they've already got this brood of deadly daughters. I don't know that some, you know, big bitey monster necessarily completes that. I guess Surma plays the role of the heavy. But if there's not a lot to say about Surma, not to worry, because the next two entries are Tuonetar and Tuoni, and there's a lot to say about them, or about the land that they inhabit, the land of Tuonela. Now again, we have La, which just means land, so the north is called Pohjola, Northland, or Sariola, Sario's land. Kalevala is the land of still waters, I think? Or it's sometimes called Vainola, Vainamoinen's land, you know, etc., etc. So Tuonela just means Tuoni's land. Tuoni is the personified ruler of the underworld, and Tuonetar is his consort, his wife? Question mark? As we've seen before, the tar suffix just means woman, young woman, maybe? So like, heir daughter was Ilmatar, and we've seen it again in, you know, names like Lothiatar. So they're kind of a power couple who rule the underworld. So let's talk about the underworld, because it's kind of an unusual place. So think back to when we were talking about Lemminkainen. Lemminkainen was killed by a shepherd, and he went into the river which flows into the underworld. And his mother had to kind of rake him out of it with a big rake. There's definitely an aquatic sense to this underworld. You have to cross this river to get there, a bit like the river Styx, but also if you fall into the river, it seems to flow you toward the afterlife. And that happened to Väinämöinen. And Väinämöinen was building a boat. I think he was on his way to Pohjola to seek the hand of the Maiden of the North. I'm just doing that from memory, but in general, when someone does something in the Kalevala, it's because they want to go to Pohjola to seek the hand of the Maiden of the North. You know, it's just kind of a recurring theme. Anyway, he sends his sidekick, who we're probably going to have to talk about in the Overlooked episode, Sampsa Pellervoinen, who's sort of the Finland's answer to Paul Bunyan. He sends him out to, you know, collect all the wood and chop up all the bits, and then Väinämöinen starts putting the boat together. But he doesn't know all the right songs or all the right words. It seems that in order to do certain things, for example, building a boat, you need to know, like, the requisite boat songs. I guess this is a recurring theme throughout Finnish mythology, this idea that magic and special skills and lore are all conveyed through song. He says, okay, I don't know these words and I need to know them. Where will I go find them? And he has a couple of different, you know, he goes and looks for them inside different animals, for example, and they're not there. So he decides, logically, that the place to go looking for these words is in the underworld, in the land of the dead in Tuonela. And off he goes, and it takes him 3 weeks to get to the border of Tuonela, right? It's three of something always in the Kalevala. You know, he rode 1 week, he rode two, soon he rode a third. And he comes to the river, and there he finds one of Tuoni's maids doing her laundry in the river of the underworld. And this is kind of what I mean about this being a homely cosmos, you know? We talked about, you know, gods and goddesses or, you know, powerful heroes constantly being engaged in, like, everyday tasks. You know, whether that's looking after cattle or hunting or collecting taxes. So here we see, on the one hand, this is the river that divides the land of the living from the land of the dead, the river that flows into the land of the dead, and yet, at the same time, you know, a girl is doing her laundry in it. Anyway, Väinämöinen gets into a big argument with this girl because she doesn't want to let him into the underworld. So this is not like Surma who wants to gobble people up. Surma wants to take you to the underworld, sure, but only if you die. Väinämöinen is alive. Väinämöinen is alive, so he shouldn't be in there. And he tries to kind of bluff his way in, and eventually he gets her to ferry him or to send for a ferry to take him into the underworld. I guess the idea being that, you know, I mean, if he's dumb enough to want to go into the underworld, I suppose that's what he gets. Now, this is a very interesting next scene, and it's something that is a recurring motif that we've seen before, actually not just in Finnish mythology, but in other types of stories as well. So, Väinämöinen arrives in Tuonela, and Tuonetar offers him a drink. And she hands him, she says, oh, you know, you want a beer? And she hands him this cup, but inside it's full of maggots and, you know, it's all foul. And he knows that if he drinks it, he'll have to stay in the land of the dead. Now compare this to what happened when Lemminkainen went to Pohjola, which is a bad place, but very much just like a country where people live, not necessarily the land of the dead. He arrived at the home of Louhi, and she, or rather the Master of the North, offered him a drink that was full of worms and foul things, and he fished them out with a hook and glugged it up. So this might be two things. You know, first, this is Lemminkainen subverting what he's supposed to be doing. But secondly, this is kind of the difference between, you know, no matter how much magic there is in Pohjola, and obviously there's a lot, it's still just a real place with real people. This is a mean-spirited prank that the Master of the North is playing on Lemminkainen to insult him, not a magic spell that's going to make him stay there. And this is also something that showed up way, 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 way back in our first series on Sumerian mythology, which was that when Inanna went to the underworld, when Kalaturu and Kurgaru were sent to rescue her, one of the pieces of advice that Enki gave them was, do not eat the food of the dead, do not drink the water of the dead. If you go into the underworld and you eat the food or drink the water there, you're going to have to stay. So anyway, this seems to be a relatively common belief, this idea, and I think it's tied into the concept of hospitality, right? What Tuonetar is doing is playing a little bit on the ritual structure of hospitality, that what would normally happen would be that she would offer a guest, you know, if you go to someone's house, they offer you a drink and you accept it. Even if you're not really thirsty, right? It's an acknowledgement that you are their guest. But being a guest imposes certain obligations on you in the same way that it imposes obligations on your host. And that is true in a lot of cultures, and apparently in Finnish culture, right? So here we have this idea that Väinämöinen would sort of be trapped in the underworld. So when he rejects this ruse, Tuonetar says, all right, okay, I will force you to stay here. And she makes him go to bed, and while he's asleep, her various children and lackeys make some nets to trap him in, but he turns into a snake, slithers through the nets, and gets back to the living world. So the most interesting thing about Tuonela as a place is it seems to be a place that you can just go to, right? In the sort of semi-magical world of Kalevala, you know, Kalevala and Pohjola are full of magical creatures and magical people, but they're nonetheless people. It's supposed to be a physical world like our one. But the underworld is somewhere that if you just walk far enough, you can get to. Right? The areas on the edge of the map, as it were, are magical areas. And As long as you can bluff your way across the river, you can find yourself in the land of the dead. It's another dimension, maybe, but it's another dimension that you can access through very mundane means. And the motivation for going there is also really interesting, that there is knowledge that Vainamoinen needs, that he goes to the land of the dead for. Now, interestingly, he doesn't get it. You know, there's not a whole lot, necessarily, of connections between Finnish and Norse mythology. I mean, guess you could say that Ukko is a sky god, and maybe he's a bit like Thor, but, you know, whatever. Thunder gods seem to be a common thing all across Northern Europe. Odin and Vainamoinen are maybe, they're both poets, they're both people who know secret knowledge, they're both, you know, they're both sort of secretive old men, but other than that, they're not really very similar. Of course, Vainamoinen is a hero while Odin is a god. But Odin says on a number of occasions that one of the places that he gets his occult knowledge is that he gets it from the dead, right? You know, the land of the dead comprises sort of, you know, the dead people are still there, and they still have their knowledge. And at one point, in the Lay of Harbard, Thor asks Odin, who's in disguise as this guy, Harbard, he says, where do you unearth these words, or where do you get these words? He's actually talking about insulting words. But Odin says, I get them from the old men who live in the hollows of the home, which are graves. Which Thor points out in his response. He says, you give a good name to graves if you call them the hollows of the home. So the idea that there's magical knowledge in the land of the dead would be one that could definitely motivate. I mean, this is more of a bit for a high-level party, but, you know, again, that's what we get when we're dealing with mythology. Your average level one characters aren't concerned with this kind of stuff. That there is some secret that's needed to, you know, find a great treasure, defeat a great evil, achieve ultimate power, whatever. There's some secret that is needed, and the only person who knows it is dead. You'd have to actually go to the land of the dead to retrieve that information. Again, and I know I always say this, you can see this in Glorantha with the story of the Lightbringers, where the sun, the Emperor Yelm, had gone into the underworld because Orlanth killed him, but as a result there was no sun, and chaos spread over the land, and so Orlanth and his companions, the so-called Lightbringers, went back into the underworld to retrieve Yelm, which is kind of a, you know, he's in the underworld half the time, right, which is why sometimes it's day and sometimes it's night, etc., etc. You can see the parallels in a wide range of different mythologies. But that idea that there is some secret knowledge in the land of the dead, and also that the land of the dead is a land, like it's a place that you could go to if you were foolhardy enough, I think that's a really interesting one. If we just took what are normally like the other planes and just stuck them on a map, that you don't have to go to some place where there's a planar gateway, you don't have to cast some very powerful spell, you just have to go far enough. That is to say, we're hex crawling into the afterlife. I think that's quite an interesting one, and that would be a very different kind of D&D setting, but it wouldn't be inconsistent with how a lot of cultures have viewed the world, right? There's always something fabulous off the edge of the map. But because people who write Dungeons & Dragons settings love making maps, there's never anything off the edge of the map, is there, right? The whole world is mapped. And if we got there, we would find that the fantastic thing was just, you know, like some slightly different ogres. There's never anything, you know, maybe that this isn't true, actually. The recent resurgence of kind of gonzo D&D has maybe suggested that there's an appetite for that kind of thing, where there is something genuinely crazy off the edge of the map, something very, very different from the world that we live in. You know, over the next mountain is not just another kingdom with another king and another bunch of knights and another, you know, wise sorceress who lives in a tower or another whatever, you know, then not just another bunch of dungeons, but actually something completely different, a place that has totally different laws and that we don't really have any business in. And I think we've started to see that, you know, in some things that are now being published, not in kind of D&D 5th edition, but I mean within the kind of broader penumbra of people making D&D and D&D related things. So yeah, that's Tuonela, and I think Tuonela can be really interesting. Now, Tuoni and Tuonetar themselves are kind of just, there's quite a few, you know, maybe it's because we don't know very much about them, but there's quite a few of the deities in Finnish mythology where, I mean, you pretty much get what you're expecting. Tuoni's the king of the underworld, and insofar as he's got a personality at all, he's the king of the underworld. He's just what you expect from the king of the underworld. But usually he doesn't even really do anything, right? He just kind of is death. Tuonetar is represented as chaotic evil, which seems really weird to me for a death goddess. Maybe I'm being, you know, maybe this is just my kind of personal philosophy creeping into it, but I always think death gods should be neutral. You know, they don't care if you're good or bad. They don't care if you're, you know, it's just like when it's your time, it's your time. And the rules are the same for everybody. You know, no exceptions. So that's kind of lawful neutral, right? But that's just me being me. Mind you, we've seen that Tuonetar is devious. I was going to, you know, I'll probably come back to this again in the last episode of this series, but there, you know, Finnish mythology doesn't come up in popular culture in the same way that, like, you know, Greek or Old Norse or whatever it does. But there is one series of novels that blends Finnish and Old Norse and some Native American mythology. The Winter of the World series by Michael Scott Rohan. There's a three book series that I think is from the 80s, and then there's a much later kind of sequel trilogy. But I don't know how much of that Finnish stuff is in the sequels, which I have read, but it was a while ago. But the originals definitely have it. And Tuonetar plays an important role in that and is presented as a kind of ambiguous character. You know, not some cackling villain like she's portrayed here, but someone who, you know, has these responsibilities and can't really escape them, but nonetheless, you know, is a little more sympathetic. You know, once again, Rohan is kind of, you know, mashing up different elements of these mythologies. Certainly the idea of the kind of spirit servant who's a little bit reluctant is something that turns up in a lot of different mythology. But then, of course, I mean, that's what these things are all about, right? Is mashing up these mythologies. So they're worth a look. If you want to see those mythologies being used in a creative way. There's also a lot of kind of Ice Age stuff in there. I mean, it's sort of set in a, you know, a fantasy setting, which is actually our Earth's Ice Age, and there's a lot of Ice Age megafauna in it, which is kind of charming. As for the presentation of Tuoni and Tuonetar in Deities and Demigods, I think, like I said, I think they're pretty much what you'd expect. One thing that I do like about the section on Tuoni is that it includes something that you don't often see, or at least you don't see very much in the Fiend Folio, which is some discussion of what this god's clerics are like, and they're quite shifty, right? It says, Tuoni's clerics roam about the battlefield, helping those who have been mortally wounded to pass on into the afterlife, which is not a comforting thought. And, you know, so sometimes they get a little bit eager, you know, that the people who are like, no, actually, I'm okay, I think I'm going to make it. The clerics of Tuoni are like, yes, we will send you on to our Dark Lord. They're like, no, I'm good. So that's kind of interesting, particularly if you assume that they're not necessarily, like, they're not murdering people for the heck of it. They're just, you know, they're just sort of seized in a fit of religious enthusiasm. Yeah, more clerics in this book would be great, you know? You sometimes get a sense of what a god's clerics would be like, but not necessarily always. I know this is a comparatively short episode of Patron Deities, and I beg your indulgence. It's just that I'm going on this trip, and it's taking up a lot of my time right now. Hopefully, we'll make up for it later. So in the next, the next episode is going to be our final episode about deities from the Finnish mythology section. It's not going to be our final episode on Finnish mythology, because we're going to do a wrap-up and overlooked episode. But in our next episode, we're going to be talking about the supreme god of Finnish mythology, Ukko. We're going to be talking about the Air Maiden, his agent. And we're going to be finishing up with Untamo, but not the same Untamo from the story of Kullervo, a different Untamo. And that's all going to be on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.